I'm Brenda Ann Keneally, documentary photographer and most recently founder and executive director of A Little Creative Class, which is a nonprofit creative exchange between urban and rural youth, both upstate and down here in New York.
A Little Creative Class is based in Masspath, Queens. So why are you here doing a scrapbook workshop in Troy, New York?
Well, it's been a long journey. I've been working with Jonna McCone, who is a Heinz documentary fellow and Price fellows at Rutgers University. We've basically been making scrapbooks together for the past couple of days. And scrapbooking is an integral part of A Little Creative Class. It's our introduction to each other when we meet young people who may be interested in participating in our cultural exchange. We do scrapbooks because as a result of the documentary that I started 14 years ago in North Troy with a group of young people who are now young adults, we did scrapbooks together. So we would have an equal exchange in our voices in the published material that will be released as a book in September. So the scrapbooks proved to be so powerful that it became a sort of program in and of itself where young people have the opportunity, particularly young people in marginalized communities, to reclaim their own narrative.
My name is Adam Statz. I'm the senior project coordinator for the Price Family Fellows Program. It's at the School of Social Work at Rutgers University. We are a program, we're funded by the Price Foundation. This is our fifth year operating. Our program provides support to undergraduate students at the university that have a background in foster care or who are otherwise at risk for homelessness. So we're really an all-around support program for those students. Our goal is really to build a community for those students at the university. Most of them view the university as their home. So we build connections with them, with faculty, other staff members. Rutgers is a very big university, 50,000 students throughout the state. So it's easy for students to kind of get lost in the mix, and especially so our students who don't necessarily have the family support of others. So we really view the Price Family Fellows Program as a community for those students. So really making a Rutgers a home for them, making sure that they're getting all the academic support that they need, that they make social connections, and are able to take advantage of all the different programs and opportunities that are at the university. We also provide a summer internship program, cover the cost of classes for them, things like textbooks, really whatever they need to get through school, that's what we're there for.
Many times through the court system or the school system, there's a need for these kids to walk a really straight line. And that's what happens when you live in an impoverished community. You are more vulnerable to run-ins with the law or run-ins with child welfare. So the idea that you would sit down and gather the pieces of your life literally in that sense when you make a scrapbook, what we call life story, record it, and then present it to the world as your idea of yourself has been incredibly empowering from what I've seen in these young people's lives.
Now, you are a Guggenheim Fellow, a Pulitzer Prize nominee. You have had your work displayed in publications like Time Magazine. So there's this paradox of you having access to amazing opportunities and your work getting exposed and the content of the work being about people who are struggling. So what is your hope with this particular group?
I am a member of what we call the creative class. I make things, I travel in an idea-based economy, and I've had to get comfortable being outside my comfort zone in terms of the people that I need to interact with so we can communicate these stories. It's one thing to make pictures or write or make a scrapbook, but in order for it to be a conversation, which is the function of the work, you need to be able to cross the bridge. I went through many phases of justifying, I don't think I ever really felt guilty about it, but probably shades of that, and working really hard to make these voices feel like something that could be legitimately accepted without the person on the other end having all those feelings as well. I now see it in terms of the way traveling in this idea and knowledge-based society, that if we have the ability to do our very best and be the person that can cross that bridge first and then bring the others, it is our duty. The greater that the wealth and income disparity in New York State, which now we hold the shameful position of being number one in all 50 states of having the largest wealth and income gap, I no longer have the luxury of feeling guilty about it. This content, these stories must get out. Our young people must feel very comfortable in gathering the power in overcoming the challenges that they've all had to in their lives. And we need to learn from each other. So a simple scrapbook, a simple personal narrative is the first step in overcoming the shame that those stories are steeped in. That shame is really, I think, if I had to think of one underlying cause to class disparity, it's shame. Because if you can get folks at the bottom who are the most vulnerable to internalize their place and feel scared to even step one foot up that rung, if we're to keep with the visual metaphor, then nobody at the top has to do anything. And that's exactly what's happening.
Hey, my name is Jonna McCone. I'm an artist, a documentarian, a journalist. And this year I'm doing a fellowship called the Hein Fellowship through the Center for Documentary Studies. And I'm collaborating to make stuff with these two lovely college students on either side of me, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
My name's Anthony. I'm a sophomore currently at Rutgers. I'm studying geography and IT, and I've been working with Jonah over the past year on the documentary project.
I'm Mariah. I'm a senior, public health major, Africana studies minor. I've been working with John on this project, and it's been really fun to learn about photography in the past year.
The Center for Documentary Studies is based in Durham, North Carolina. It's been around, I think, since the 70s, and it's this awesome hub for all things steeped in folklore, Southern studies, film photography, digital photography, audio storytelling. It's hard to describe, but like there's a big porch and rocking chairs, banners with photographs. You go down there and you just feel your home.
So Mariah and Anthony, why are you at the Sanctuary for Independent Media in North Central Troy?
Yeah, it was about a year ago when Adam, my program coordinator for Price Family Fellows, approached us about the documentary project. I remember I first wanted to join because I'd always been really interested in art and seemed like another great avenue to like explore that. So the entire thing has been really awesome. We're here now because we're working on zines and more storytelling techniques. It's been really great. We've interacted with like a lot of artists and seen how they work and what their process is. And it's been really insightful to see, you know, the different ways people can make art viable in their life.
Emira, how about for you?
Anthony kind of summed it up pretty well. I would just like to add some of the things that's been amazing to see is why people pursue art, what's the passion behind it, and just how dedicated they are to what they do. I know for me, prior to this project, I didn't really think there was an art bone in my body. So this has kind of really brought that creative side out of me that I like love that I necessarily don't get to always express being a college student and having to do academics, work, and, you know, other things.
What are some of the goals of this project, would you say? I mean, what are you hoping to get out of scrapbooking your life? And could somebody just define for me what a zine is?
My goal when we sort of found some funding to do a spring break trip was, the goal was really simple initially, just to kind of all get out of this public safety building that we meet in and just kind of like move across space and time together, like get to, like I've gotten to hear what kind of music Anthony likes, and I know what Mariah is like as a roommate now, and Mariah has seen me in a beyond delirious state of exhaustion. So that was really just simple, like be together and bond, because I do feel like they've put a really incredible amount of time and energy and thought into these life stories that they've been working on with photographs and writing, delving into their family archives, telling oral histories, thinking about the relationship between memory and how we speak about ourselves, the way that we think about ourselves and our possibilities. And so, yeah, I think this scrapbook process was, I think, just a way I wanted them to collaborate with another artist. You know, Brenda's been doing photography for more than twice as long. I wanted them to get to work with someone else to make stuff and see what kind of came out of this in terms of actual pages for a book. Like right now we've got exhibition that's going up that's sort of framed photographs. And then in terms of the zine definition, we did a zine workshop. Does anyone remember or want to talk about defining zines? And we also went to the Tang Museum and saw a couple of zines. So I feel like you guys kind of know what they are.
I mean, it's kind of from, you know, the word magazine. To me, a zine is really like a collage that kind of has a certain aesthetic to it.
Is it concept-based? Because if it's based on the word magazine, then you get a magazine based on, like, the Smithsonian, where you have history or National Geographic, Cosmopolitan. I don't know why certain magazines are coming to my head right now. But is there a concept behind the zine, would you say?
For me, it's definitely, like, the storytelling narrative, trying to find a creative way to express my memories, like through these photographs that I've been finding and digging up, and also like how I feel now and reflecting on how all these things kind of interact and affect me today.
I guess zine also seems to imply something that is self-published and it's almost an off-the-grid publication. I've had those connotations. I mean, I know Blue Stockings, the radical feminist bookstore in New York, they have workshops on zines. So it's interesting that you guys are making something that's kind of a living off-the-grid format for biography. Do you want to jump in on that, Mariah?
Definitely. I just want to kind of say, when I think of zines, I think of the ideas of like memories, even looking at the in the Chang Museum that we looked at, those zines were kind of like either an amazing like quote that they liked or even like a comic book, something that means something to somebody. And I think that's where the underlying root lies within a zine, that it's something that you have this wonderful memory with and you kind of want to share it. And like, here's my zine.
I think you really just clarified it for me, which is that the off-the-grid component is I'm trying to communicate this memory to you, and I'm going to use any way, any artistic format or visual format to communicate that memory. And collage almost seems to imply, or pastiche, that you're going to use a multiplicity of formats to communicate this is what happened to me. So how is that going? And what do you see as the usefulness of telling the story of your lives in this way?
For me, it's definitely been really therapeutic, especially like the process of getting the photos. So I've had to interact a lot, you know, with my parents and my aunt and uncle. And definitely like, you know, they're curious what I'm working on, trying to frame that to them and explain to them, you know, what I'm documenting and why I'm documenting. I've been really, it's been opening up avenues of conversation that definitely seem like my parents mostly would have wanted to ignore. So it's definitely been, yeah, therapeutic in that sense.
Have you run up against any uncomfortable moments? Because I imagine that, you know, you run up against some of your own narratives of what's happened in the past and then have to revisit those. And maybe it's almost like looking at all the splintered light coming through, that like there are so many different ways of looking at one memory. So have you had some challenging moments?
Yes. I mean, in writing my own narrative, it does bring back, even just writing about a particular moment, it brings up some emotions. It brings up a different part in time. And I think one thing I can appreciate from this is like just this oral storytelling part, that like one day I may not fully remember this. So having a written account and being able to, hey, share this with my children, like this is my story. Almost like in the notebook when she does it, like remember me this way, like I'll always come back to you. Kind of in a sense, so I'm learning to appreciate that oral storytelling piece and being able to have this go down generations and maybe inspiring my kids to continue the story after I'm gone or like other family members. But it has brought up those moments of trauma, that pain. And it's like, it's kind of like reopening a wound. But like Anthony said, it's in a sense therapeutic, because yeah, you can talk about it, you can address it, which is really good.
Working with young people like Jonah's young people who have overcome and are overcoming tremendous struggles. In fact, going through college, which is the first step for them being able to be tremendous bridge builders, because now they've seen both sides. Each story is steeped in just resilient move after resilient move. Anyway, when John offered me the opportunity to work with these four young people, I couldn't have been happier.
I guess I would say our first couple of meetings, it was a lot of people talking about their experiences growing up and with foster care. And I really like just felt like it was so beautiful to hear everyone speaking and listening to each other and what that kind of shared experience was like. And then to start to try to think, like for me as an artist, okay, what are the visual materials or the oral materials or the kind of material culture that we can sort of create out of these memories? And is that worthwhile or even valuable to people? And just kind of like think through that process. And the other thing I wanted to say was, We have a lot of material, and I feel like we could just have a gallery show and be done with it. But I've been really like trying to make a photo book happen in some form, because I just want it to be like this really like thought out object that they'll have, that other people can pick up, that kids who face similar things growing up can pick up. And I think it kind of gets at what both of them were talking about with like, you have a memory, but then, you know, it fades or it's lost. And I think that this form will be really powerful once it's done.
Is there going to be a final showing of this work?
Right now we have a exhibit that will open at the Zimmerli Art Museum at Rutgers in early April. And then I'll probably plan like some other show in the fall at a gallery. Like, I don't know. I have to figure out where. Like, there's some galleries in New York that I was thinking would be cool. But then it's like, you know, we just are in a gallery in Manhattan just because. Or should we, you know, I'm less familiar with the galleries in Brooklyn. But I really want to find like the right space, because this show that's coming up is not like quite the right space, but it's a good like the work in progress show, I guess. So yeah, we'll have something.
So you're working with other artists, but Anthony, I know you're a visual artist. Anthony Amariah, do you have plans for your own creative endeavors in the future, following in the footsteps of people who you're working with?
Definitely, yes. This project has sparked a high interest in photography. So I kind of would like to become a like photographer, have that become like my hobby. A little bit more. We'll see how that works out. I'm hoping it does.
If anyone wants to like donate us anything for like cameras or stuff like that, I mean, it would be, yes, we need cameras.
How would we do that?
You can write to me. I'm Jonna McCone, JonnaMckone @gmail.com.
Cool. And Anthony?
Definitely. It's been really great to see, like interacting with all the other artists. Growing up, I've always kind of been aware of the fact that like art isn't the best idea for career wise. And so knowing that, it's always kind of, I think I've been downplaying my own interest in art because of that. But coming up here and working with all these other artists and seeing how they're actually able to make viable like careers out of their passions, it's definitely been really eye opening. As going through college and, you know, my experience, I definitely think I've been growing an interest in, you know, social work, or not necessarily social work, but advocacy in that kind of way. And it's been inspiring to see, like, hopefully in the future I'll be able to use, you know, my own passion for art and my own passion for helping others and combine it in a meaningful way.
So, Brenda, what has been your favorite part of the past 2 days?
Well, as I watch the young people write and really become involved and almost need no interruption, I didn't even want to give a suggestion or break for lunch, because once they start writing their life story and putting their narrative together with visuals that they've collected, you can really see them claiming and having a perspective on their own life that's really their own, not what they've been told by a teacher or a judge or a child care worker. And to me, in its purest form, scrapbooking among these young people is learning from the experts. They have lived experience. They're on the front lines of social and class equality. And they're also living testimonies to social and public policy of our day. Whatever we decide as a country, as a community, as individuals, is manifest in these young people's stories. And the scrapbooks are a testimony to that. This is affirmed every time we do one of these workshops. And today was to another level. And it strengthens my resolves. And it makes me see it as a duty to just simply carry this program as a platform so that we can hear from more of these young voices. They can connect to each other and to themselves and really reclaim their place in our state and in our country through personal history. It's very, very powerful. The personal is political. And I'll just say that the kind of guiding premise of the scrapbooks is that it's almost metaphysical. For every action in the world, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And so I see the equal and opposite reaction manifest in these young people's lives. And it's right there in their visual narrative in the pages of their books. Very powerful.
If people want to get information on you, or if they want information on how they could be a part of Scrappin' in New York State through A Little Creative Class, how would they do that?
You can email me as director at alittlecreativeclass.org, BrendaKennealy@gmail, BrendaKennealy@gmail. And our dream is to have this scrapbook workshop throughout every, especially the communities in upstate New York that have really, really high child poverty rates, to partner with every school, every library, every summer program, every probation program. So it really becomes almost the basis for kids to start talking to each other, to their parents, and really hearing the strengths in their own life for themselves.
So the last question is, how do you see the work with the Rutgers students and other students who you've worked with as being essential to giving the kids something that they need in terms of a chance to just say, this is who I am?
It's more a validating of this time and space is yours to think just about yourself, to think about your life honestly. Sometimes a lot of young people feel a great sense of disloyalty in saying the way adult circumstances in their life have impacted them and foisted more challenge upon them. When you become involved with child welfare agencies or child protective, the ironic term, there's a great need for young people to protect their parents and a great shame in schools. The Rutgers students seem to all have in common the intersection with those systems, and they think about it in a sane, matter-of-fact way, also not denying that it's been painful to them. So that set of circumstances already is empowering and gives permission to the next group of young people who hear it, because it is about the sharing. It's about the recording and preserving these stories for a tapestry of voices that I hope will create a new kind of history, first for our neighborhoods, then our communities, then our state, and also being that bridge for other young people who need to cross it.